AG1 is a comprehensive and convenient blend of over 70 high-quality ingredients. And what that means is each morning when I wake up, before I do anything else, I drink AG1 to set me up for the day. It keeps me clear-headed, full of energy, and focused on whatever I need to do, like writing the fighting cock, for example. One scoop, once a day, before breakfast, and that's it. I've actually found that I've not been needing coffee in the morning to get me started. I've still been drinking coffee, because I love coffee, but it's not because it's like a necessity to do so. AG1 is made out of the highest quality ingredients subject to the strictest manufacturing standards. AG1 is NSF certified for sport, and this process involves exhaustive testing and verification that every serving of AG1 is exactly what you see on the label. If you want to take ownership of your health, try AG1 and get a free 1 year supply of vitamin D and 5 free AG1 travel packs for your first purchase. Go to drinkag1.com/thefightingcock. That's drinkag1.com/thefightingcock to get started. And to help the podcast. Thank you very much. Have a great day and enjoy the show.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's the fighting. It's the fighting. Cock. It's the fighting. It's the fighting. Cock.
A camel chutney.
Hello and welcome to episode 22, season 12 of the Fighting Cock podcast. Today I'm joined by Alex and Spooky. How you doing, boys?
Very good.
We've had a bit of a morning, haven't we?
A little bit.
So, I mean, in my head, what this podcast was going to be was we're going to talk a bit about the game against Brentford. Why are we like this? Why are we playing like this? All that shit that every other podcast has been talking about this week. But the vast majority of the people that were sending in questions were... Well, there was a couple of things. One was just saying, and we'll go through some of the questions and obviously answer them directly. But one was saying like, you know, are you happy with Enoch and what's going on at Spurs? And then there was one bloke going, the reason why you never criticise Enoch is because you're paid off by the club. There are a group of people out there that believe that we are so influential that the club feel the need to line our pockets with money so that we don't criticise Enoch or Daniel Levy. Bearing in mind, this is a podcast where we've talked about shagging Daniel Levy, licking his bald head. We've said all kinds of mental stuff about Daniel Levy that would definitely offend him and he probably wouldn't want to hear. But some people think that we're sucking him off all the time. And I guess where this comes from for a start is that we haven't been as vocal. When I say we, I'm just talking about myself. I haven't... You guys have your own opinions. It's not like we all share the identical opinion about Daniel Levy and Enoch. But my position has always been from where we were in 2001 when they came in. They didn't actually get controlling power till 2006. From 2006, you can see a clear upward trajectory of what's been happening at Tottenham. And it's been slow and steady progress, and there hasn't really been any trophies in that time apart from one League Cup, I think. And I can just see that. I can just see the upward trajectory, and I can see that continuing. Although, and I'm sure we're going to talk about this, I am moving. My dial is moving towards a scenario where Enoch aren't at Tottenham and Daniel Levy isn't at Tottenham anymore. Not that I think that will ever happen. That's my feeling, is that perhaps this is the right way for Tottenham Hotspur to go. Alex, before we go to Spooky, Alex, where are you at currently with Enoch and Daniel Levy?
I think the same as you, but just further along the path, really. I've always said my approach has always been exactly the same as what you've just said in terms of where they took us to where we are. I think it was incredibly naive to kind of dismiss those things that have been achieved. But I'm tired and bored of Not of the slow and steady. I get the slow and steady. But I don't... You can't... Selling to buy or a philosophy of the philosophy that we clearly have within the transfer market, it doesn't matter who says what journalist says what anyone thinks, the last 20 years have proved what our transfer market strategy is, right? Sometimes it works and we get absolute stormers. Sometimes it doesn't, and then that's the cycle that fans and their eye are kind of going. But you can't charge what Tottenham charge, about to post record revenues, and still be in a position where this is our transfer policy. And that is where the issue comes from. No matter what it is, whether it's the style of play on the pitch, what manager it is, it's a question of is the club moving forward? And I've landed on a place now where I genuinely believe that if they can get fourth the cheapest way possible, I think they're majority happy with that as a club.
What, as opposed to speculating and for a league title challenge?
I think it's too much. I think, and they might be right. It might be too much. You might not be able to compete with City and...
Well, Arsenal have done it.
Well, exactly. But, you know, I'm just saying, you know, long term, you know, or in fact, who knows whether they're right or not. But that's... you can't sell us... Don't sell us the dream if you're not going to put us to sleep first. Because you told us this is what the stadium is for. This is what the training ground was for, right?
Yeah.
You are at this point now where you've got a manager. You can't hiring the types of managers that they've just hired. It has to. It's not just a face. If you're not going to back him, you might as well just... Well, I don't know. I was going to say something bad. Well,
they haven't not backed him so far. I mean, we've got another whole transfer window to see what might happen.
And that's also a good point. And that's what I did say this morning in our little chat was that's where I'm at the minute. But I am. I think if January is big dog, and I say we should wait, and I'll be happily proved wrong, and I'll happily wait until the summer, but we say it every single year.
Yeah.
This summer, it's big this summer, next summer, this summer, maybe a January, and we should be there or thereabouts. It's exactly the same every year, and I'm tired.
I can't disagree with any of that. Spook. Mm-hmm. What are you saying then?
Here we go.
I can't disagree with a lot of the sentiments behind that either. It's that there's nothing I can dispute with, you know, the energy around the club. If we are this big club, we've got this foundation, we've got this training ground, we've got a super stadium, we've got loyal supporters, we charge a lot of money for season tickets. The foundation is there. Now the financial side of it, I'm not an expert in it. Right? I don't understand why we're still holding back, or it appears that we're still holding back. Can we compete with City and Chelsea right now? Can we pay? It's not just about wanting these players. These players know that if they pick one of those two teams, they're going to win something at the end of the season because of the monopoly that these clubs have, because of the way they've been doped up over, you know, it's not even over years. It's almost generational now. If you go back and you look at the Uniteds and Arsenals who pay more wages than we do, they do that for a reason, because we were left lagging for so long and having to catch up. And yeah, there's the positive side of what Spurs have done. We've caught up, more or less. But we're almost like proud of what we've done as a club. And I mean that from a board level, that we've put ourselves in a position where we're always in amongst it, always accidentally challenging or contending, just from the outside looking in, not quite smashing the door down, but always there. Somehow, even when we write Tottenham off, we somehow do it again. And it's almost like, well, we don't need a template or a blueprint or a design. It's just fucking chaos just puts us in this position. And then the argument comes around to why aren't we consolidating? But really, the cusp of it all is, why aren't we actually planning ahead? Why aren't we ruthless? Why aren't we looking at what do we need to do what we need to do? Now, arguably, that's exactly what we're doing right now. We're just living through it. We appointed Conte. You know, we backed him in one summer. Obviously, disputable, again, whether you think that was enough. But surely there's steps to be taken, even in the moment. And I guess that's where my brain's a bit tangled with it all, because as much as I agree with Alex, it's, and as much as it feels like we're repeating the same thing season after season, I don't know whether a lot of the context is appreciated or respected. And I know that sounds like an apologetic way of saying just wait and see, and how long do we sit here and wait and see? But what are we up against? We're up against clubs that are just so far ahead of us. So ultimately, what you're asking for is something that's probably not doable in a Jan window or a summer window, or even five of these fucking windows might be too much of an ask, because they're always stepping forward again. So it's tricky. We don't know what Levy's thinking and Enoch are thinking, right? You know, can they sell a $4 billion football club to someone? And whoever buys us, can they actually come in and spend money? Or are they going to just look at the profit margins and do exactly what Levy's doing now? Have we just put ourselves in a position that's impossible to break out of? Or is that just an excuse? Is there a means for us to go, right, how much is that player? 80 million? Chelsea are bidding what? 90? We're bidding 110. Can we actually do that? Because if we can't,
sorry, Spick, to cut you.
You're gonna have to cut me off a lot.
I know. Just on that though, we're not asking to compete with Manchester. I don't think people are asking to compete with Manchester City or Chelsea. We appreciate the gap between the two clubs and the owners and the motives of the owners, right? We understand that, and I'm sure people that are Enoch out will. That's what they want. They want a nation state to take over Spurs, so we have unlimited money, so we don't have to hear of a player having a release fee and Tottenham not meeting it because of the sake of saving 6 million euros. Like this Porro guy that I don't know much about him. I've been told that he's very good, that he would improve us. He has a 45 million euro release fee. If we are after him, like another club, Newcastle, that was owned by nation state, they would go and just pay it and wouldn't think about it. That's what people want. Some proactive, aggressive transfer business. And it doesn't seem like we get it. However, I've just looked at Transfer Market, which just shows the arrivals and departures. Spurs, according to what I'm looking at right now, which is the ingoings and outgoings, Spurs paid 169 million euros, including the Romero transfer of 50 million euros. And we got back 38.75. That's a speculation of over 100 million euros. Is that not what people are asking for? Or is it just that those players aren't as good as what they hope they would be?
I'll let Alex answer, but I've got something to say about transfer.
Go on.
I wonder if that includes, you know, that was not going to include things like Ndombele and Lo Celso, where we couldn't...
It includes their loan transfers out.
So they're nothing or whatever the loan fee is, a million and a half,
whatever it is.
But what I mean is, those players are expendable essentially. So there's going to be some recoup from them anyway. That's just a question of timing, right? And if they've got them on loan, then we don't know what the situation is with things to buy at the end or whatever. So that's part of it. And like I said, I think you're right. I don't think anyone is asking to compete with Man City and Chelsea. But
just quickly, Alex, is that not speculation? Over 120 million euros that that's gone out of the club and not come back in on players. Is that not what people want?
Yeah, but it's not. Of course it is. But the issue that we've got is that if we're not careful, football will leave us behind again. Spooky talked about Spurs being left behind, you know, through the 90s or late 80s or whatever it would, however that timeline worked. We have to accept that football is moving in this direction. Another top four place is gone now, long term, because Newcastle are here, right? So that's three spaces pretty much nailed on, yeah, for the most part. Or let's say two, because Liverpool, you know, might go up and down. Who knows what's going to happen with their ownership as well?
They're going to be bought by Saudis.
Yeah. So what I mean is regardless of what you think about it, of whether you think a nation state is a good thing or a bad thing, the speculation has to continue. And part of the reason why people get frustrated and why, you know, and I'm not Enoch out for the most part, but why I'm frustrated is the fact of everything is there in place now and has been for a little while now. for us to be able to go and do these bits and pieces. Now, we might be proved wrong. January and the summer might show, but actually, you know what? This was what it was. They wanted a full year with Conte and the long-term targets over a summer, January, summer process. Prove wrong. I'll be ecstatic. And if we get the players that he wants and then it doesn't work because that's just football and the way it goes, fine. No problem. I don't mind finishing third to City and Liverpool. I don't mind finishing fourth to City, Liverpool and Newcastle. Because those are things that, like Spook's right, we probably can't compete with long term. But finishing below Arsenal in this year or next year is unacceptable.
But when you look at how they've behaved, it makes complete sense. They have speculated significantly.
Yeah, I agree. That's what I'm saying.
And that's what we need to do, I think.
Yeah, we definitely need to be more aggressive, right? If there's a play that we really need, the manager really needs to be able to push on to consolidate whatever it is, the defence and the right wing back position. We've got to do that. Otherwise, we are holding ourselves back and then delaying everything, right? But this thing about competition, our fans do want us to compete with City and Chelsea and Newcastle. And arguably, right, football cycles work in weird ways. There's always an opportunity. There's always a season with someone who does have a lot of money, doesn't do particularly well. That's happened. That's happened in the last 10 years, right? And that's been the seasons where Spurs have elevated themselves, maybe above and beyond what they're really capable of. And it's
we've benefited massively from United dropping off, yeah
exactly. And then Chelsea have an off season and whatever else, and you know, in the Leicester season, things can happen. You have to be ready, but also you can't just wait for those opportunities. You have to always be ready to compete. And then obviously at the end of the day, if City have spent 200 million quid in the summer, the likelihood is that no one's going to win the league other than them, right? Mm-hmm. It's going to take something disastrous to happen for City. So I don't disagree the club shouldn't be thinking, well, is it really worth it? Let's not spend the money. But, I mean, quite obviously, that's the wrong way to look at it. And I'm sure they're not thinking of that. They might be thinking of ways of being competitive in terms of what they're looking to bring in. But I guess where it all gets clouded is in amongst all the sound bites and the rest of it. Like, we spent 50 million on Bentancur, who could have be perceived as a lucky signing, but we weren't sure who we were going to get that window. We raided Juventus. We bring in two players who play above and beyond what we expected them to perform by, right? So the whole thing about transfers is there are players that are going to cost a lot of money. And that, again, falls into the bracket of, can we really afford them, the entire package, the agent fees, the wages, the rest of it, if they are also being looked at by Chelsea and City and whoever else? And do we need to be more astute? And if we are more astute and we're buying someone for 15 million quid who might be now, I don't know, worth 50, 60 million, why is that an issue when we're actually doing that bit of business? Because I've seen the criticism. We're linked to a player right now, 50 million quid, and people saying this is typical Enoch, typical Tottenham. Is it typical Tottenham then to buy a Bentancur? Is it typical Tottenham to buy a Modric, a Berbatov, a Carrick, all these players that we do end up signing? You know, maybe that, unfortunately, is where we're at as a football club, that pick off these type of signings, because the ones that you're saying we should be going for are the ones that are looking, and they're not looking back at Tottenham. These players are looking at, yeah, Spurs would be, might be a stepping stone if I can't get my move to Man City. Or they might be looking at Tottenham and thinking, why do I want to struggle there for a couple of seasons and win nothing, when I can walk into the City team, sit on the bench, play 20 times, 25 times, get my winner's medal. That, we're up against that. So what I'm trying to say, Al, is I get it. I want us to compete with City and Chelsea. And I get that what we need to do to be able to do that is spend money aggressively. And it just comes down to the fact that we probably don't have that money to be able to do that.
Unless someone
can prove me otherwise, you know.
Just on that again, I'm not sure how accurate this website is, but according to Transfer Market, right, we spent in 2021. this obviously includes both transfer windows. 110 million pounds euros over in that period. We received 13 million in transfers. The next year we spent 95 and received 34, and obviously the one I just mentioned about 169 in 38. But in our last two transfer windows, we've signed Kulusevski, Bentancur, Brian Hill, Emerson Royal, Jed Spence, Bissouma, Romero, Richarlison, Perisic, Longley. It's quite active when you look at it on paper.
Yeah, but it's, I mean, but when you convert that to pounds, it's roughly what, 60 million quid net a year.
But we're fixating again on the amount of money going out. Like,
yeah, but I'm just saying,
Chelsea and City are overspending on these players.
I'm not talking about I haven't meant, like, this morning we didn't mention anything to do with Chelsea or City. We
and
know
it matters, mate, because that's who we're up against when we're looking at these players that we need.
Yeah, but the difference
to
is
elevate the team, surely.
The difference is that we're not, the way we go out and do it, and although we get, you know, particularly last window, I was, you know, I said at the end of the summer transfer window, I thought it was absolutely mental that we had not got a right wing back. And if they're going to buy someone like Jed Spence, who Conte obviously does not want, then that's part of that approach as well, right? But the issue, I think, generally is, and whether people articulate it in different ways or not, I don't know. But the issue is, it doesn't seem like that we are even... Take Chelsea and City out of it, right? Okay. And maybe United to an extent, because I know, you know, their commercial power is mental, right? So they're always going to have that money. But with the rest of that area, it still seems that everything that we can possibly do has always just seemed to be... tried to be done as cheap as possible. Now, as a business, that's brilliant. That's good. That's what you want to do. But it's that narrative that becomes very, very tired. And it's hard to get behind. You know,
even though we spent 60 million quid on a backup striker.
But what I mean is 60 million quid net a year in general of investment into the core asset of your business, the product, right? For a club, for what is supposed to be what, a 3 or 4 billion pound?
It's not
club,
60 million pound net a year though, Alex. It's more than that.
60, 70 million quid net once you convert
across, across 4 seasons. But last, well, no, it's a 38 million euros out, sorry, in, and 169 million euros out of the club. That's much more than 60 million.
Yeah, but we did about the last 3 years, so we averaged it out, yeah?
Yeah, but it's better for my opinion if I just
last year. I wrote it down and tried to average it out. But what I'm saying is it just doesn't... I hope that I'm proved wrong in January and the summer. And I'm at that point. I'm not saying I'm completely there yet, but I'm at that point now where if it's not going to happen in this January and this summer, then I think we have to accept that it's just not going to.
What does this summer... I mean, a lot of people ask this question about what do we need in order to finish top four or challenge, not, you know, in coming seasons. But what does a successful January transfer look like? It's got to be...
Whatever Conte wants it to look like.
Is it true? I heard... I read something on Twitter that Conte said he was happy with his back line.
I think he's got...
That's just a diplomatic answer, so he's not going to...
So my issue here, right, and we were talking about this, is that without Romero, who, in my opinion, I will restate it again, should have been available to play against Brentford. Anyway, it's a different conversation altogether. Without Romero in it, that back line is easily, by a country mile... easily the weakest in the top six, and it may even be the weakest in the top 10 currently. And under Jose Mourinho, we had a back line of Tanganga, Sanchez and Dyer, and we played against Newcastle away, and it was almost like his hands are tied. He's had to play that back line. 3 years later, those three players played for Tottenham against Brentford. Not all together. Sanchez came on for Tanganga at a weekend. That has to be down to Enoch or moreover Daniel Levy, that these substandard players are still the core of our defence.
Mm-hmm.
Not Tanganga isn't the core of our defence, but do you know what I'm saying? The fact that we should enter a Premier League season 3 years later and Tanganga is still part of that back line, there's a failing there. There is a failing, and that has
I can't disagree with that.
You don't have to,
genuinely.
Yeah.
Just in terms of the way that we do manage the squad, I mean, I'm not going to pretend that this isn't a problem because there's so many parts, unnecessary cogs in the machine that need to, I don't know if that analogy even works, but there's so many parts of this squad that should have been moved on. And we should have been doing that in the last 3 years and not be in a position now where we have to offload a fair amount of players, right? You know, players like Sanchez can come in and play brilliantly for 10 games and then that's it. Eric Dier is up and down. You know, he's a patchy player who was fantastic up until he was recalled into the England squad and then he went to shit again. And now he's just got absolutely no self-confidence. He's doing things that you do in the Hackney Marshes, you know, just like thinking, like his concentration, his focus is completely shot.
Seems like
so these players do need replacing, and it is. Listen, the thing with Enoch, the thing that bugs me out is everything that we've been speaking about, really, and we speak about this every season. What is our identity? You know, Pochettino probably gave us what we all wanted from a team. Okay, the identity, style, belonging, the players, the heart, the spirit, everything connected. And then you come out of that not managing it well, and then you kind of look at the team, you look at the squad, you look at the club, and you've got to ask, who are we meant to be? What type of team are we meant to be? The thing I've banged on about is bringing in Conte, very unlike, it's not a Tottenham appointment, right, for a number of reasons, not just on the managerial level, but the style of football. Much like Mourinho was an experiment, Conte was more of a calculated one in terms of, you know, he might bring us something that we're missing, that winning mentality from top to bottom within the club. And he has had a positive effect because he's shown us and shown the club perhaps that if you want to achieve certain things, if you want to set a benchmark, you have to work at a certain level. And for the most part, the noise is out of the club, Paratici, the work he's been doing, just everything that I've seen and that we've seen, you can argue that it's heading in the right direction, but it still needs a bit more. We can't just settle with what we've got and go, well, you know, maybe Conte can do a job with this player and that player. You know, Spurs, I spoke about this recently. Spurs went out and bought Jed Spence, right? And Conte's made a big thing about it's a club signing. Should we be making club signings for the future right now? Should the club be looking that far ahead when we're in the moment?
I think it's good practice to do that. Most managers wouldn't have handled him in the same way. Like, Conte has to take responsibility. What do you think? What you answer that question?
Well, I think it's fine buying Jed Spence in the future. And or Conte and Levy agreeing, look, buy me a right wing back now. You can buy Spence, but I'm not going to use him now because that's not who I'm looking for. And if there's an agreement, then that's fine. It's just two different streams of, you know, just an awareness for the future and an awareness for the present day. The point more is related to what is the blueprint this club have? Like, is Conte in for the short term to get the most out of what we want?
Well,
it's
difficult to see a blueprint when you don't even know if your manager is going to be here in 6 months, that
exactly.
He's not committing to. And everything around the club, I think, which adds to the, you know, the unsettled nature is, we don't know what we're going to be looking at in a year's time. And I'm sure that is as much about Conte and him having this position where, oh, well, the club needs to match my ambitions and stuff. Yeah, I get it. But, you know, you can leave any time. But the contract thing is creating an issue. Sign a fucking contract for 2 years. You know you can walk away at any time anyway. So just sign it so we don't have to be confronted with this. So this is another air of, so we're not, at least a false sense of security that fans definitely need when thinking about the long-term future of the club. Sign a 4-year deal if it's offered to you. Then if you get sacked, you walk away with loads of money. Just remove that monkey from the back. It's not an issue that we should have to think about constantly. Oh, is Conte going to be there? Is Conte going to be there? I mean, I've got to say, the style of football at the moment, I couldn't give a shit really whether he's here or not. It's not fun to watch, and it's difficult. But look, I'm not saying get rid of him. I'm not saying Conte out. I'm nowhere near that, right? I want him to stay, but his lofty attitude of himself doesn't match what's happening at Spurs currently. So I'm just, I don't know, that's what I'm thinking about there.
But this is, I think my point was, and it was more to for Alex to answer, just to get a different perspective, is there even a template that's possible in modern football? Because there's so much urgency around being successful and not falling behind. And you can see what happens at other clubs when Newcastle, you know, get a load of money. It kind of changes the landscape again. But is there a way to imprint a philosophy on a football club like Tottenham? Like, people wanted Potter and they wanted this kind of 5-year project type of thing, which I don't think exists anymore. Mm-hmm. It's almost like in the moment, if you have the resources and the capacity to compete, go for the jugular every single time. And obviously Spurs are not doing that. They're always looking to build into something or evolve into something. And with Conte coming in, it was about this winning mentality thing, right? And if that doesn't work for whatever reason, because we can't back him or he's not comfortable being at a club like Tottenham because the money isn't there or for whatever reason, what then happens after that? Do we afford Pochettino, you know, in this fantastical theoretical scenario? Do we afford him one or two seasons? At what point do we turn around and say, well, it's just pretty football, mate. There's no end product. We're never going to win anything. Just play pretty, which is exactly what people were saying at certain points in Poch's tenure, even though it was probably the most glorious 5 years or two peak years that we
what
had.
What are you asking me?
Yeah, what's the question?
I don't know. I guess can my you point
build,
is... It,
can you build a
No, you're right. I'm just ranting for the sake of it.
No, you say lots of good things, but you said like 5 minutes ago, I want Alex to answer.
I guess what is it that the club need to do in the short term to build into like a long term, long term presence? If you look at Liverpool or City or any of these other clubs that are competing, right? Mm. They just seem to do the same thing every season, and they just evolve every season, and they have little dips, but they're back on it again. Where Spurs are trying to get in that position where they can then find that consistency to be competitive, but we can't quite jump up to that level. So is it as simple as what you're saying? Just speculate more. Is that it? Yes. Because you could throw
behave like a £4 billion valued business. All right, I don't think there's another business I don't think there's many other businesses in the world where you can get away with charging the highest price in the market to your consumer.
Mm.
Talk about sell the biggest possible dream as a to the consumer, and then not operate in said manner. And I think they're getting away with it. And now, would they be able to, even if they did do that, would you be able to compete with City and, you know, let's just talk about Man City and let's say Newcastle long term? I don't know. Probably not. But what do? Give up? No. You're in one of the biggest industries in the world, one of the richest industries in the world. And you have been in the top six of that richest industry in the world for a decade. It's time.
We're in top 10, Forbes. Which is clubbed.
Yep. We're also fourth in the league and qualify for the knockout stages of the Champions League. Mm-hmm. You know,
there hasn't been progress. However,
I'm not saying it's progress, and I'm not saying we settle for that and you know war a trophy and the rest.
It's representative, though, isn't it? Fourth in the league is representative of.
Yeah, look, and we're better off this game week 16 this year compared to game week 16 last year. We're 5 points better off. So you know,
Where are you at then with just the kind of the reaction to it? Because when results are good, when things are going well, when everyone seems to be on board with everything, everyone shuts shop. I think the moment there's a bit of adversity, it then reverts back to...
That is the nature of
protest.
That is the nature of football. But
should it be like that?
No, but you're fucking asking people
be that
not
fickle,
to be,
man.
If you're asking people not to be reactionary. Spurs fans.
Fair point.
You wouldn't have had a blog. You know, we wouldn't have started this. People weren't reactionary and want to hear what other people think, and then. You know, that's football fandom, man.
You wanted me on the pot today to bury me, didn't you? Really?
No. I think we've. I take what you say on board. You know, and I'm still in your position. I got another. If they prove me wrong in January, I'll sit and suck him off just like you.
Fuck's sake. I'm swallowing everything, mate.
I'm calmer than I was when I started the pod because of you, Spook. So it's not.
I'm just trying to do the. I'm just trying to be balanced with it. I don't like. I keep saying this, man. I don't disagree. Maybe I'm fixating on the wrong things. Maybe you're me fixating on people.
There's no right
the
way
they're reacting.
There's no right way to react to this, though, Speak. There's no right way. It's such a nuanced and difficult thing to truly understand. And my issue with a lot of Enoch Out lot is it's so binary for them. From my perspective, when I read the tweets and we get attacked on Twitter and accused of taking money from the club so we don't speak about the things we're speaking about today, that there is no room for conversation. It's just, this is what I feel, and you're a twat if you don't believe me. And I'm like, I don't not believe you, but there is no discourse. You know, the bit just to prove the point, look, about 2 years ago, there was a guy, Sava, and he had a podcast, and he's direct polar opposites to the way I feel about Tottenham and Daniel Levy. But we managed to have a podcast and have a decent conversation about that, where he had free reign to say whatever he wanted about Daniel Levy. And we've also agreed with another guy, he's been away for a few weeks, so he hasn't been able to do it, who is staunchly Enoch out and Daniel Levy out, staunchly. And we were going to come bring him on and have that conversation as well. But there was a question here that I wanted to bring up. I've lost it. From Lee Bennett. He says, and this is what's curious to me, because I feel like I said at the beginning of the pod, the needle moving somewhat towards Enoch out. Lee Bennett, he says, is it just me, or has there been a turn in the Levy Enoch out debate in the last week? Seems more people are coming around to it. I, for one, am Levy and Enoch out. Think Spurs have reached the ceiling with Enoch, and we won't go any further under the current strategy. Right, well, we've talked about a lot of that, but do you agree that there is a sort of shift towards Levy out or Enoch out, Alex?
I don't know, because I think it's easy to see that, you know, like a kind of rolling momentum that you see on social media. Sometimes it looks like that and feels like that when really nothing's much has changed. I couldn't agree more with that guy's sentiment. I feel like there's a ceiling that has been hit with the approach that we take, and the next level needs to be done by someone else. That's my charitable way of saying it now.
All right, so that moves on to the next question, right?
Yeah.
Would you rather, this is from Michael Kenyon-Water, he says, would you rather stick with Levy and Enoch for the next 15 to 20 years, or would you prefer new owners such as Newcastle? However, the new owners have the same grey cloud behind the scenes surrounding them as Newcastle, as any of these massive nation states, you know, that buy football clubs these days, as is the case with Abramovich and Chelsea.
For me, there will be numerous podcasts from back in the day where I'd be like, you know, I'd stop supporting Spurs if that happened, blah, blah, blah.
No one's going back. No one's going to back and listen to it.
Football as an industry, as a sport, as an entity, has moved past that point. I could not care less. Give me it.
Okay.
Wow.
Very honest. Speak.
I don't know. I would hate myself for being hypocritical. I don't think I can. I think I can spend. It's a cheat code, right? Like if you're going to experience something, if you play video games. Sorry, Alex, I'm going here. If you play a video game,
Alex
and
walked off.
and it, you know, the entire narrative, you know, if you're going to experience it on a difficult setting, that means that you can't die at any point in the game. Where's the excitement? Where's that hope that something might happen? Where's that belief that something might happen?
To challenge that, Speak, is that it's no longer a cheat code.
Well, here's the thing. That's exactly what I was going to move on to, which is why I'm conflicted. Because when you've got one or two teams with the cheat code, then fair enough, then you're all screwed. But if you've got five, six, seven teams with a cheat code, then it kind of becomes a...
Great fixed card update.
Yeah, no, don't try and get involved in the analogy. You know.
Graphics card update.
But the point is, it then becomes more competitive, right? Because everyone's throwing money at everything, and then suddenly you bidding 90 million for a player, thinking, oh, no one else is going to bid 90 million. You know, you've got five other clubs doing it. So then it comes down to what option is best for the player, you know, where they think they're best suited. And it becomes more competitive. What that does to the rest of the league and football is in itself not great, but I wouldn't be comfortable with it. The way I see it, right, and this is obviously really distorted and demented, is that we have tried for as long as I've supported Tottenham to become something more than what we are, right? We were a cup team when I was a kid, and then we went through the last 20 years of positive evolution. It's not that we haven't tried to win trophies. We have. We've got to semi-finals. We've got to finals. We've got to the Champions League final, which seems surreal now. We have tried. We have done everything right, but not quite got past the finishing line for whatever reason, whether it's squad depth, whether it's that lack of experience to anchor ourselves on, to find that extra bit of something. We've always tried to do it the right way, whatever that is. And it's disputable because we're still a rich club, right? And we're far more privileged than a lot of other clubs. And we've had a lot of great players. But we haven't quite managed to get there. And it feels like when we do, it'd be the greatest money shot ever. And we just retire. We quit football. We're playing Tottenham. We'll never top it. But if we suddenly get bought out, then it changes everything. And I'll tell you how it changes everything. Those players that we're desperately wanting to sign that go to City and Chelsea will be like, oh, Tottenham have got money now.
Yeah.
300 grand, 400 grand a week. They can pay my taxes as well. I'm going to go Tottenham. This is too crowded at City.
Love it.
Too crowded at Chelsea. And then we start winning things. And to me, as good as it will feel to goad everyone and say, have some of that, what are you going to do? What are you going to say that we're only winning things because we're spending money? That's what you lot have been doing.
My
kind of get that, and I buy into that. But it to me, it's still a cheat code. I need to work past that. And I don't think I can.
My fear, though, Spook, is that we're already at that stage. We're already at that stage where, in order for Spurs to be successful, you just simply have to operate in the way that Man United and Man City and Chelsea do. So we also know that football is and has been a cesspit for years in terms of, you know, having an ethical grounding and supporting.
There's no ethics.
It's too late. Like there isn't a single Spurs fan or person that creates a podcast or any kind of media who benefit from the very, very dubious companies that operate in football and people that operate in football. And you know what? Fundamentally, 95% of football fans do not give a shit. They don't care. Look at the Qatar World Cup. Everyone was banging on about it. It's the worst thing that was ever going to happen. Everybody watched it and absolutely loved it. Not everybody. There are a few people that were, you know, kudos to them. Just didn't watch the World Cup, but everyone else did. It's all over Twitter. It's a constant conversation all the time. People just do not give a shit, and you're asking them to, and it's nice, but it's just not realistic. So the question we always used to ask when we got confronted with like Enoch out, why do you love Daniel Levy? The question was always from the way we combat it when we spoke about it. Typically, me and Spooky definitely would be and T. I remember T asking the question, what do you want? And now we know the answer. What they want? They want a trophy. Saudi. They want Saudi owner.
Oh,
they want a Saudi owner who has as much money as Man City. That's
but what do
what
you
want.
Guys want? What do you?
Well, that's the journey I've made. That's the journey I've made because I was always.
But that was when the playing fields were level. Relatively.
Yeah, I was. I've always been Levian. I've never had a particular issue with him. Frustrated at times, and oh, for fuck's sake, type feelings. But never staunch about it.
You want an oil baron?
I genuinely am at a point now where I think you know whether you're being
an oil baron. He wants an oil baron.
Whether you're being charitable or whether you're being charitable or not, as in the next step, they're just not able to do for us, and it needs another thing, another entity, a bigger entity. And the bigger the entity is, the more dubious it's going to be, regardless of whether it's a nation state or a company. You know, you could have Amazon take us over. There's plenty of stuff that is not great with them either, or you know, whoever. But we are at a point now where if you are to be able to do what you need to be able to do in football in terms of winning stuff, that is what we need.
Whether we want it or not, it will happen two times.
It will happen. Of course it will.
It will happen to every big club in the Premier League, and it will filter down into the Champions League. And what we will have is essentially, sorry, a championship. What we'd have essentially is a domestic Super League, which smaller clubs cannot get into because the money differential between the Premier League and those others would be so great because we have that ability to spend. What really needs to happen is people that govern the game need to prevent this from happening by being ultra strict with financial fair play. They are to a certain extent, and it does to a certain extent affect the way Man City operate now and Chelsea operate. And Arsenal will have to look at the way they're spending, I'm sure. But
That's the issue. Arsenal are the issue, aren't they? Let's not pretend that what they're doing at the moment is not...
That's made it worse. It's made it worse.
And because they're proving our model wrong.
I don't want to put it on record, though. I don't want to put it on record. That's the thing, but you have to. You can't not acknowledge it.
Just on the contradiction of where my head's at. What you say now, I completely agree with. I would welcome new ownership right now. I think most people would, because it'd be something different. I think that kind of refreshes and reboots everything, because you're thinking, right, this is a new way of doing things. What scares me is what that new ownership looks like. You know,
what, because of morality stuff?
No, not so much the morality. It's if you look at some of the American investors in United and, Liverpool, they got it right, didn't they? So there's always a risk, you know. I guess what everybody wants at the end of the day.
It's so weird you just said that. Spurs, when you just said that with Liverpool, they got it right. Like,
well, they kind of did.
100% they got it right. They smashed it. FSG were incredible, right? And before that, as Alex was saying that before, then the second time around when they got American owners, because Gillette before. But what I'm saying is that they got it right. It was. Who got it right? What is that? Like, as an existential concept, when you say Liverpool got it right, who? The owners? The fans had nothing to do with it, so it's nothing to do with them. They just benefit from luck of the draw.
But that's it.
So what is... Who?
Well, they had a manager.
This is it, man.
They had a manager and a chief executive that were placed in charge of footballing matters, and FSG provided cash. And they had a manager and a chief executive in Twine, where it took some time. You know, that 4-1 at Wembley, you know, I remember listening to the radio after that about how many wanted Klopp out, right? You know, there was a turning point. But the difference is, and everyone talks about Van Dijk and Alisson and all the rest of it, of course they do, but it was two targets that they paid over the odds for, because that manager said, this is what I want and what I need to give you what you've hired me to do.
Yeah.
And that's what it feels Tottenham won't do. They'd say, Conte would go, this is what I want. Here's the player A, here's player B. All right, well, we'll go as hard as we can for player A and B, but actually what it feels like we're going is kind of 75, 80% to try and get them. If we can't get past that, well, I've got player C and D here, which should probably do the trick.
We were linked heavily with Van Dijk and we didn't get him, and therein lies the problem. Just for a moment, take you back to what our backline would have looked like if we'd signed Van Dijk.
Oh, don't do this.
I just want to. Because I remember talking about it at the time. On the right of our centre-back three would be Van Dijk. In the middle would be Toby Alderweireld. And on the left would be Van Vertonghen. That would have been the best defence in the world.
And Mane was elite.
Feel good? And Mane.
And it's a great point, Mane, right? Because that was Liverpool going and paying more wages at a time. And it's known, because he talked about it with a reporter in Senegal, that it came down to those wages and feeling wanted more by Liverpool. And that was the first time where I was a bit like, at this point of where Liverpool are and where Spurs are, we'd in the Champions League then at that time, was I don't understand why we can't go and get that player. And that's an example of frustration. I'm not saying that's the be all and end all, but it's a nod to the type of issue I have now.
I'm not sure, and this is why this topic is so difficult to move forward is because there's so many opinions. All of them are right and all of them are wrong depending on your viewpoint. But I did put a request out on Reddit, on Quiz on Reddit, and we've had a fair few replies. So I don't want to just not go through those when I've asked them and then they've responded. That would be a dickhead move. Okay, so we got one here from Brew to No One. It says, do you think this transfer window will make or break Conte re-signing?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So what, so if he doesn't sign,
I can't give you the parameters.
No, what I'm saying is, if what does that look like? If he doesn't get defenders or whatever it is that he needs, he might as well leave now, or does he just run his contract down to the end of the season?
I think the worst case scenario is he doesn't get who he wants. He feels that it hasn't been the club haven't tried hard enough, or however you want to phrase it. That kind of, there's like murmurs and rumors and stuff about the end of January, and then by mid February, end of February, beginning of March, he end up walking. The best case scenario is he gets the 2-3 players that he wants, and we do exactly in the second half of the season what we did last season.
All right, I want to rattle through these. But the top rated question was with 21 upvotes: kill, marry, or fuck Poch, Ryan Mason, or Conte. Kill Mason, right? I know it's harsh to say because obviously.
Marry Poch, kill Mason.
Fuck Conte. Agreed, Spook.
What's Mason ever done?
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. I think that was an easy one.
Good.
Ryan.
Spooky, you're going to love this. I expect us not to say a word for like 5 minutes here. Cool Sonic, he says, wasn't all this more enjoyable in the 90s and 2000s when a loss and a draw seemed inevitable and a win to be celebrated? We weren't bombarded 24 hours a day with rumour and gossip. We weren't exposed to all the online hate amongst fans of other clubs when football was just a game.
Yeah, but also no. I like us wanting... For a long time, us talking about the title was fantasy, right? And in the last 10 years, if anything, what Levy and Enoch have done has put us in a position where we are now talking about why aren't we buying these players in order to challenge for the title. And people will say, well, it's nothing to do with Enoch and Levy, really, because it's just the evolution of a club like Tottenham with the supporters that we have and the loyalty
and the money
that we have. The money that we're spending, like Al said, the season tickets and the rest of it. So we're in a position where we should be. We have a right to be in this position. Again, Levy and Enoch have done a good job to get us in this position with the foundation. But I'm not disagreeing with anything that's been said on the pod, that I do think we need to step up. I'd rather be in this position right now than back then, because
was it more fun, though? I don't think it was more fun. I think you're looking back with rose-tinted glasses. It was hell. It was hell at times.
Do you know what it's like to never win away from home? It felt, and again, it's probably an exaggerated memory, it never felt like we won away from home. And when we got a point away from home, it was like it was celebrated, but it was such a small club mentality.
Specifically remember an away win. Like this season, I couldn't tell you how many games we have won away.
Mm.
Over the last, the last sort of 10 years, I have no idea. I've lost count of the amount of times we've won away from home. In the early 2000s, I remember us winning away at Leeds 1-0. Robbie Keane scored.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what? What? We've beat Leeds at Elland Road. Are you fucking mad? Who scored?
We were
Robbie
bad,
Keane?
Mate. We were so poor.
We were shit.
And now
they were good. That was the problem.
The frustration really is good. That we know we can be so much better. Do you know what I mean? That's where people get irritated and frustrated with the club and the owners and whoever else, is that we could be so much more than what we are. And I think everything that Al's talking about and buying those players, there's no guarantee, right? We can buy the right players for the right manager and still win and do nothing. But I think as a fan base, we'd be more accepting of that we're doing everything in our power. And we're quite obviously not. So I'm not going to dispute that at all. We can do a lot more. But also at the same time, Conte worries me as well. If the club think for a second that he's not going to commit no matter what, then that will probably have an impact on what we're going to do.
What's the point?
In this window. Exactly. But then you look at the club again.
Sign the fucking contract.
Get on with it, yeah.
Sign the fucking contract so the club can then back you. Basically, Zard's Conte's going, I'm going to ask you for £80 million for two new centre-backs, right? But I'm not sure whether I'm going to be here in 6 months. Now, I know, and Daniel Levy's going, right, so you want me to spend close to £100 million on two new players without shifting other players on, and you're not 100% committed to what we're doing. The next manager might not even rate these players. I haven't got another £100 million to spend on two more centre-backs. Conte is complicit in this problem. He has to.
Agreed.
You can't. Agreed. You cannot. And it's different from Pep. And I've said it. Well, Pep Guardiola, the best coaches in the world, sign rolling contracts. Pep Guardiola is so good that it doesn't matter whether he signs a new contract or not. He's going to be there if he wants to be there because he's not going to foul. You can't guarantee that Conte won't foul at Tottenham. So there, he has to sign a long-term contract. So the club know he's invested in the players that he's bringing in. He has a role here, and it's really, really important that that he understands that. I'm sure he does. Listen to me. I'm sure this has crossed his mind. Anyway, let's fucking move on quickly because we've got more other stuff. This is one for you, Al. Chilito Burrito, he says, who would win in a three-side match between the Extra Inch and the Fighting Cock?
Next question.
All I'm saying is... Alex is very good. John Bass is very, very... I'm not saying he's better than you, Alex. He's an excellent footballer. Like, he is class. And you're class. You know what I mean? There's no... I think Alex and John alone would probably beat the Extra Inch. And Bardi, you're listening to this. If you want it, you can get it anytime.
We'll just use some colourful language beforehand and they'll be all flustered and stuff.
Okay. Next question. Sifty says, are we conceding first because of our players, our tactics, or our opposition exploiting one of them? Another person said, Diverman 6969, he says, will we ever score first again? I don't know if we will. How good will it be if we go 1-0 up against Villa? Like, what a feeling.
Oh, mate.
Feeling. Like, when we scored our second goal, I didn't move against Brentford.
No.
I've seen it before. I've seen that movie six times this season. Just control the first half. That's what. Do you know what? More than a last minute comeback, I just like a nice controlled first half where we're the better team and maybe go in.
Spurs are like your kid when you've had to count to five. You've asked them to do something right, and then they haven't done. Cock!
Sorry about that. We seem to have lost the end of the podcast, but it was only Alex talking, so it wouldn't have been that interesting. I hope you got something from this. I'm not sure if we've moved the conversation forward at all. I'm not sure where I'm at, really, in terms of Enoch and Daniel Levy and what the future of Tottenham holds and how football is changing and whether or not Spurs need to change with it. Would slow and steady be enough to keep up with the other teams? Or do we need a complete change in the way we operate and sign and sell players? I think there's arguments for both, but do let us know what you took from this episode. And we'll be back to normal next week. It's the Fight In. It's the Fight In. Clock. It's the Fight In. It's the Fight In. A Camel Tottenham! Sports Social Podcast Network.